Drucker admired Sloan, but when he looked around the rest of GM, he was often surprised. On several occasions, he found a big difference between Sloan's ideas and the real world of GM's factories and offices. One of Drucker's first appointments at GM was with a man called Marvin Coyle. Coyle was head of Chevrolet. He was a big man with hard, mean eyes. Many of Chevrolet's employees were afraid of him. Coyle knew it, but he was the kind of man who didn't care. One morning, Coyle was telling Drucker about the importance of Sloan's ideas.
"We like our managers to be independent," said Coyle. "We want them to take their own decisions."
At that moment, the conversation was interrupted as a message started to come through on the noisy machine behind him.
"Is everything all right?" asked Drucker.
"Oh, yes," said Coyle. "That's just the manager in Kansas City. He always tells me when he goes out to lunch."
Drucker shook his head.
"So, that's what independent means, is it?" he said to himself.
Although GM had only asked Drucker to write a report, he soon realized that he had enough ideas for a book. Business books were not popular at that time, but he found a publisher and called it Concept of the Corporation. On the whole, the book was very positive about General Motors. Drucker was very enthusiastic about Sloan's way of mixing central control and independence for managers. But he also found a few faults. He was especially worried about the company's attitude towards its workers. At that time, all businesses were tough on the workers. At General Motors, they were only employed when there was a job to do. During the company's quiet times, many workers sat at home and earned nothing at all. When they were able to work, managers often shouted at them and ordered them to work harder. But as early as the 1920s, people had asked if this was the right way to manage. An Australian called Elton Mayo had done some tests with 20,000 workers at Western Electric's Hawthorne factory outside Chicago. He wanted to see the effects of different lighting conditions on the factory's production. In the first test, the lighting conditions in the Hawthorne factory were improved. The result was that workers increased their production. In the second test, the lighting conditions were made worse. Perhaps surprisingly, production went up again. Finally, lighting conditions in the factory were returned to normal. And once again, the workers' production improved. How could Elton Mayo explain these results? He decided that the improvements in production had nothing to do with the changes in lighting conditions. Production had only increased because the workers felt valued, and they felt valued simply because they were part of his test. Elton Mayo said that this showed that it was important for managers to be good to workers. It was not enough for managers to offer extra money for good work and punishments for bad work. He said that people work harder when they feel their work is valued. Managers needed to understand that they were dealing with human beings and not machines. Drucker thought in a similar way. In Concept of the Corporation, he wrote that business should not see workers simply as a cost. The workers are the most important thing in any company. He believed that they should help to manage the company. He also said companies like GM should improve the workers' conditions and pay them regular money in good times and in bad. Drucker thought that these points were completely fair, but when the top management of General Motors read the book, they were very angry.
"This is not a study of General Motors," said Marvin Coyle. "It is an attack on the company."
Alfred Sloan wanted nothing to do with it. Nearly all the people that Drucker had worked with at GM stopped speaking to him. If any GM manager was found with a copy of the book, he was told,
"It's probably best if you go and work for Mr. Ford."
While he was working at General Motors, Drucker often asked people, "What books on management have you read?" The answer was nearly always the same.
"There aren't any books on management, are there?"
Then one day, one of the GM managers suggested that he should visit a man called Harry Hopf.
I'm told he's got the biggest collection of business books in the world, he said. A few days later, Drucker was knocking on the door of Harry Hopf's house in New York. An old man answered the door.
So, young man, said Hopf, I understand that you are interested in management.
Hopf led him into a huge library that contained thousands and thousands of books. Drucker looked around him.
Are all these books about management? He asked.
Hopf laughed.
No, young man, he said. These are mostly about selling, advertising, and production. I have, I believe, only 6 books about management in the whole library.
In fact, when Drucker looked at Hopf's 6 management books more closely, he found that 3 of them weren't really about management at all. It was clear that if Drucker wanted to read any more books on management, he would have to write them himself. In the years immediately after the Second World War, Drucker thought deeply about business and the job of a manager. In 1954, he published a book called The Practice of Management. According to some people, it was the book that invented management. In the book, he asked some important questions. Probably the most important one was, what is a business? At that time, most people's answer was, an organization that tries to make a profit. But Drucker disagreed. For him, business wasn't just about money. He said that a business should always be a part of society. He said that business should always act responsibly. For him, the purpose of business is to create a customer. A business should always make something that people want to buy. It might be a completely new product, or it might be something that people have always wanted. But businesses should never try to trick people, and business people should never be greedy. The purpose of business was to serve society. If business people got rich as a result, that was their fair reward. And what about managers? What exactly was their job in Drucker's idea of business? To explain, Drucker told a simple story. One day, he said, there were 3 workers who were all cutting some large pieces of stone. A stranger went up to them and asked, "What are you men doing?" The first man looked up from his work and said, "I am earning some money." The second replied, "I'm doing the best job of stone cutting in the country." But the third man stopped and said, "I am building a beautiful and enormous church." The third man, Drucker explained, was the true manager. For Drucker, management wasn't just about the everyday running of a business. For him, a manager was someone who could see into the future. A manager was someone who could bring together people's skills and energies to produce something that was exciting and new. In the old world, the most important creative person had been the artist. In the modern world of organizations, according to Drucker, it was the manager. But in practice, how could a manager do this? Drucker's answer was management by objectives, MBO. He said that a manager's job was not just to accept orders from above. A manager should always understand where he or she wants to go. A company should set an objective for a manager and then reward that person when they succeeded. Over the next 20 years, MBO was accepted by almost every big company in the world. Since the 1950s, Drucker's ideas have become more and more important. As well as a university teacher, he has also been a consultant to businesses and governments. People have always been ready to listen to his ideas because it seems that Drucker is able to see the future very clearly. In 1959, most people in the world worked with their hands in factories or fields. Rich economies made their money from factories and physical strength. The most important products were things like planes, cars, and trains. But 1959 was also the year that Drucker first talked about the knowledge worker. He said that more and more people are going to start working with their brains. He said that information and ideas will have a higher value than oil, wood, and iron. Today, in many countries, the
The computer has made that situation a reality. But when Drucker first had those thoughts, the computer that sits on your desk today was the size of a small house. In the 1960s, Drucker also thought hard about the job of government in society. He believed that the real purpose of government was to make decisions and to lead society. He was worried that many governments also tried to run businesses. He said that governments were bad at doing things themselves, because they nearly always wasted time and money. His solution was for governments to sell their businesses to private companies. In 1969, it seemed like a crazy idea. It was the time of the Cold War. In countries like China and the Soviet Union, governments owned all the businesses in the country. Even in places like Western Europe and the USA, governments owned many of their country's factories and services. It was almost impossible to believe that anything could change. But some people were listening to Drucker, and during the 1970s, his ideas spread from the world of business into the world of politics. In the early 1980s, the UK's new Prime Minister, Margaret Thatcher, tested Drucker's ideas about government for the first time. She started selling many of Britain's government businesses, like car factories and telephone companies, to the private part of the economy. Many people criticized Thatcher and said that she was selling things that belonged to the British people. But soon governments in the rest of Europe and Latin America were copying Britain. And in the early 1990s, after the end of the Soviet Union, even Russia started to sell some of its factories and farms. Drucker had never dreamt that his ideas could travel so far. Peter Drucker has had a big effect not just on business, but also on the world beyond the factory and the office. But management has always been at the center of his thinking. So what about Drucker's own ability as a manager? He has never really been a businessman himself, and perhaps that's a good thing. With complete honesty, Drucker once said, "I would be a very poor manager, hopeless, and a company job would be very, very boring.